This is Phil Rowe on Cambridge 105 Radio.
So, Mike Shalom is with us this morning from the Cambridge Independent, one of the correspondents there in one of our fairly new weekly topical series. We look at some of the latest stories that are going on. We start with Tribulation, the Cambridge University boat race, and I was watching the men's event. I missed the ladies, actually. Goldie won. The men won, the ladies' first team won, and the reserves won. That was a quadruple strike for Cambridge University. Mike's with us this morning, and he's got some little-known facts passed on from your sports correspondent.
Not little-known for Longville, because they're outlined by our sports supremo, Mark Taylor, in this week's in Cambridge Independent, and as well as the facts that you've just mentioned there. There were the lightweight wins the previous weekend, and also slightly tangentially, but varsity wins just at the end of last year. So a supreme display of confidence from Cambridge teams in sporting events this year.
With varsity, we're talking about Twickenham, Oxford versus Cambridge at rugby, for the 15s.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's happened is that there's been a coherent sort of like program of development. Having seen Oxford, the way I look at it is, you know, Oxford chucks money at situations and Cambridge invests. A subtle difference, but an important one, you see.
Yes.
So that investment has now paid off, or starting to pay off, and it's great to see the results this year.
Cambridge team row up to Ely. They were mentioning this when they were talking to Claire Balding on the coverage that BBC Television were putting out on sort of Saturday, and immediately came into my mind the dark mornings. And I'm wondering actually how they get up to Ely, because there's Bates Bight Lock in the way. So presumably they just hoik the boat out of the water, all eight of them, including
their
cops.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah,
there must be some sort of
slipway.
Unless
they've got boats there, Phil.
Unless it's a slipway, I guess.
They sort of cycle there, perhaps, and then get rowing from there.
I think they start from about the A14 bridge, though, to head north. So I think it's probably just an interlude. They have to get the boat out of water. Immediately got me thinking about that. I'll have to find out more and do some research and maybe get some of the first team on the show sometime. Had some of the physiotherapists that work with them. They've been very interesting.
Brilliant.
Into our studios.
Marvellous backup team.
Talking of marvellous things to do, maybe for some people are getting fit to be plunged into the ocean at very great depths, because Bear Grylls' new series, The Island, is starting next Monday on Channel 4. It's, I think, his sixth series now. Survival Island, the new series, will be starting just on for Bank Holiday Monday. Rich team, poor team this year as well, Mike, where we've got those that are earning, I think, over $100,000 a year in one team, the so-called posh and rich people, and those that are breaking just about the national minimum wage, £26,000.
Are
the poor team, so to speak. An idea. Well, the producers obviously sat around and decided they were going to do this.
I guess so, and I mean, it's these shows reflect sort of social, cultural sort of shifts, so I suppose there are, let's consider that, what the implications are. We know, of course, that there's a big difference in lifespan between people living in different parts of Cambridge, so that's just sort of like being writ large on this show. But I mean, we had Eden, I don't know if you remember that, Channel 4 programme, where we had a Cambridge representative, our very own Anton Wright, who made the show very interesting. It went off script quite quickly, and with very interesting results. So who knows what's going to happen? I mean, are they supposed to meet up at any point, these two teams, or did they decide that they just didn't want anything to do with each other?
They are going to be on very close neighbouring islands. That's the normal formula anyway, Mike. Whether that'll be so from Monday, we'll have to find out, of course.
Yeah, well, it'd be very interesting, of course. I mean, will the survival instincts of people who perhaps have honed their survival skills in poverty reign over those who've perhaps had more time to consider what they how they want to play it.
It's going to be an interesting shakedown. As we've mentioned before, someone from this area has taken part in the island in the survival program. We don't know that that's happening this Monday, though, is it? Is there another Cambridge person taking part in this?
Nathaniel. I would have thought he'd been right in at the beginning. I mean, right. You know, we'll find out. But yeah, I mean, we'll be introduced, I would have thought, you know, like on our screens, and we'll be rooting for him, I guess.
Let's hope our local lad.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Yeah, let's see how that one gets on. Down to serious stories. The award-winning series on television was airing again, a new series, on Monday evening. The QMC, Queen's Medical Centre at Nottingham. There's also Nottingham hospitals, Nottingham City Hospital and Nottingham, both of them being featured, of course. Black Alert, again. The series was featured because it was being filmed during January and February. We see scenes where operations are being cancelled there. And the latest on the Cambridge Independent Splash, your headline this week for the publication that's just been released from the press at the moment, the situation here locally at Addenbrookes Hospital, where ambulances are being turned away.
Yes, it's shocking, isn't it? And there's the ambulances, there's the operations being cancelled, and there's 12-hour waits at in A&E. So extreme concern about how the staff there are coping.
Does it mean Addenbrookes is currently on black alert then, Mike?
I believe so. They're reorganising. I think that's the plan. But of course, this reorganisational process, is beyond one individual hospital, however competent, to achieve. It has to be done at a political level. And I think, you know, the concern that I have personally is that the NHS has been run down systematically in a bid to make it ready to hive off to private concerns.
Theresa May saying this week, though, that they may be looking at an NHS tax, a little annexed amount of money from you and I and the next person, presumably those above the tax threshold, which would be, I think, £12,000 is a basic rate of earning, and we start to pay tax, where the NHS may well get a little precept, as we would call it, if it was a local authority amount of money that could go towards the NHS.
We already pay our tax into the NHS.
Through the National Insurance contributions.
Yep. And I don't understand how you can justify having an additional tax for that. We need to understand exactly how the structure of the financial structure is working at the moment and where resources can be best deployed. But this government has chosen to embark on a course of austerity. These are the results. So to now hold up their hands and say, oh, look, can we have some more money, doesn't fill me with confidence that it's going to be spent in ways that are really going to progress the NHS, because it's an ideological situation that's going on here. Some people want it to be privatised, and the majority of people assume in good faith that it's going to be free at the point of use ad infinitum, and if it's not going to be, then we should be talking about that.
Jeremy Hunt, the Health Minister, saying, though, that he likes the idea of another tax, if you like, for the NHS, but we shall see where this goes. The government are actively now looking into that, so we'll see where this shakes down for later in this year when some more announcements are going to be made. Cambridgeshire Constabulary, Mike, at the moment, of course, all crimes are really pretty much given the same resources, but the idea that police forces could split into two to deal with different crimes.
We've got some excellent thought-provoking remarks from the Constabulary, who are now claiming that they're back on track, having had a dip at the time they were being assessed, which was, they say, when there were a lot of terrorist offences being committed. And bear in mind that that Cambridgeshire, you know, if there's an emergency in London as well, Cambridgeshire staff, Cambridge police officers will be sent to those zones, which depletes the resources available to, the local community. But I mean, I have a huge amount of respect for what the police and all the emergency services do and what they achieve, and any comments by them should be taken very seriously. There's still another, sort of public services battle going on here, though, isn't there, really? And that needs to be considered. And with the police force, I just have a sense that at some point it might be best to separate the call-out functions from the sort of, like, if you want, the back office. Some of the, you know, for investigating cybercrime, for instance, does that really need to be done in Cambridge? I mean, that could be done. Some of the functions could be better off being centralised, which would free up resources. I mean, this is obviously on the basis that budgets are going to remain tight for some time, and the investment isn't going to be there, but hopefully there will be investment, I'm sure. But to put it in the right place, to actually identify the call-out function, the frontline officers, as the ones that the community is desperate to feel are available and are there. That's the key, I think.
So centralising some resources, such as a National Forensic Centre, when it just comes to not cybercrime necessarily, but looking at the idea of putting together more DNA resource and tracking of genetic databases against crime activity as well, rather than having a regional centre.
Yes, that's right.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
The power of having a central resource and facility, and maybe being able to up the budget to use the latest technologies, which of course are moving along very quickly when it comes to...
Very quickly, and I'm not always convinced that all the different police forces use the same, you know, IT computer architecture, so I will investigate that now I've put that out there and come back to you on that, but I think there's a lot of disparities.
Of course, there has been the police national computer for the PNC for many, many years, though, since the early 1990s, late 1980s, where police forces share their data with each other, including Police Scotland.
Let's hope that continues. And I personally hope that continues with Europol as well, because that has to be an international... The fight against crime has to be an internationally coherent sort of, like, offensive campaign, if you want.
We're told post-Brexit that Interpol will still be working very hard with all UK local police forces. So moving forward from March next year, of course, and through the agreements that have already been put into place. But we'll take a little bit of a break, allow you time for your cup of coffee.
Thank you.
And we'll come back after travel.
See you in a minute.
So we... Welcome back, Mike Shalom, for part two of his review of this week's edition of the Cambridge Independent. He's one of the journalists there. We're going to start with, well, maybe a little bit of not-in-my-backyardism going on, Mike. At the moment, Cambridge North has quite a lot of land near to the new railway station. A development of some 7,000 new homes possibly there. It's on the former Civil Engineers Permanent Way yard, where years ago ballast, lots of granite, sleepers, engineers work from. It's where the railway sort of supplied themselves. And it's spare land. Some of it was taken for the car park for Cambridge North Station, and a few sidings remain there. But it does mean that a lot of so-called brownfield site is ready for release for housing.
That's right, Phil. I mean, you've covered it so comprehensively, I don't feel I've got anything left to contribute to what you've just said. But yeah, I mean, there's new homes being built, shock horror, and as is often the case, we all know the problems with housing, the prices. We all know that Cambridge is a local economy that's doing very well. It's very much standing on its own two feet. We also kind of sense that we want to spread that out beyond Cambridge, if possible, you know, in some sort of, you know, nice, organic, constructive sort of way, without losing our, you know, cutting edge of skills in the city and all the rest of it. So what's the problem? I mean, you know, we need more houses. There are more people on the planet than ever before. That number is only going to get, you know, to accelerate. So we need more houses. And what, you know, here we are. That's out in from your description. I think it's quite near the Mick George sort of what was a quarrying sort of facility up near sort of St John's Innovation Centre. That sort of land around there, around Milton. There needs to be more homes. Let's build them. I mean, of course, there are kind of sociological problems with building new towns, which people realise, I mean, Camborne residents realise there isn't even a rail link between Camborne and Cambridge, which
never
is
was.
Odd.
Never, you know, like, never yeah, not even, you know, even like, pre-Beeching yeah. was there one.
Actually, I have been doing a little bit of work for a story in the mental health arena, and I met somebody, met a gentleman who works for Mind, and they have assigned somebody to new settlements for cultural and community purposes. In other words, the mental health issues on new developments where there haven't been people before, there's no sense of community, it feels random, there's a lot of sense of alienation, those people need support. So we need to do it in a constructive, we need to build in a constructive way. You can't just build them and then walk away from them. They need to be integrated. So care does need to be taken to create new sort of types for these new templates. But as long as the developers factor all those sort of parts of the equation in, why can't it be a success?
A community takes time to build. After all, Mike, you know, 2-3 years after people have moved in, they know their neighbour. We hope so, anyway. I hope that's the way Cambridge
works. Well, the Cambridge community has been built over many centuries, isn't it? I mean, it's still a work in progress. And, yes, of course, communities take, you know, sometimes generations before people feel connected to and have a sort of like a narrative, a storytelling aspect to their own local culture. That's what binds people together. That's what bonds people together. Otherwise, we're just sort of strangers in Dormitoriesville, you know, like who are just passing in the night.
They do say that it takes 20 years before you're not an outsider anymore if you move into a rural village.
I buy into that. I have someone who moved to Glastonbury from... I'm a Londoner originally and went to live in Glastonbury for 10 years. It took me about 5 years, you know, before I sort of felt like, yeah, I'm here now. You know, I've got a GP and a dentist and, you know, the kids are in schools and all this sort of stuff. It isn't an instant thing. You can't just magic it up.
Before you know the fella's name in the pub. But you call him on first name terms. We just have another minute or so to mention in Dispatches Paul Kirkley, who's your columnist at the Cambridge Independent.
He is
a glowing report is to come,
Paul's,
I believe.
Just such a wonderful, witty, smart, savvy, you know, he nails it every week. I mean, he's worth the price of entry, folks, you know, like... he's hilarious about all aspects of the nonsense that we have to put up from, you know, like politicians and cultural figures and all the rest of it. And this week he's gone all serious on us, actually, which I like, because, you know, there's a place for entertainment, and then it's sort of like, okay, well, let's have a look at something that's, you know, who are you, sort of, how's life affecting you, where are you up to it all with? And, you know, he recounts the story of his father's passing some years ago and how it worked out. And he's a committed atheist, bless him, and his concern is that because we have he's saying that we treat pets more kindly than we do people when it comes to dying. And, you know, we try and hang on to life till the last possible moment. We insist on it regardless of the quality of experience. And that denies people the right to a dignified death, if there is such a thing, you know. So, check it out. And don't worry if it seems a bit, you know, it's coming up to Easter. You know, there's room for a thought-provoking analysis of where we're at and what's going on. So, and next week, I presume he'll be back, you know, banging on about, you know, like all things frothy and bemusing.
So that's the Cambridge Independent on the news shelves at the moment. Mike, we have come to the end for another week of this week's review of things that we can find within your covers.
Lovely to be here, and happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter
and
to
everybody
you.
Out there.
Indeed, Mike. And we'll see you next Wednesday at the same time. Thank you very much for coming in today.